Fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors, leaders, and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force Corp. One family, one mission. First responders helping each other. And our sponsors. Insight Training LLC, your best bet for fire service tick training. The Firehouse Tribune, where you can expand your horizons in emergency services and learn to work hard, stay safe, and live inspired. And LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. Also, our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Responder Wipes, uniquely formulated wipes for first responders to reduce the risk. Haas Alert, creator of the safety cloud for our roads. Fry Guy Levers and Nestor Bars, the amazing new hand tools for the fire service. EFT Corporation, 40 plus years of innovation in donation and payment processing solutions. 911lifestyle.com, first responder burnout prevention and improved health. The Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004. The Firefighter Cancer Support Network. The Albemarle Sweet Shop. The North Florida Fire Expo. And the Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The Five Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. Happy to be here with you and happy to have you here with us. And my guests today are returning guests. They are great supporters of the podcast and friends as well. And these people are co-team leaders for the Firefighter Cancer Initiative here in South Florida. And I am speaking about Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez and Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Soli, who have been with us before. Great information, and they're with us again to talk about the Firefighter Cancer Initiative and some of the new news that's coming out of that for us. Now, while you're listening to this podcast, and we hope you like it and you want to hear some more, you can either check for additional audio versions on your platform that you like, your favorite podcast platform, or you can go to our website at www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org and just hit the word podcast on the tab across the top menu, and that will take you to our podcast library page with over 210 episodes there. And should you have any problem, well, just let us know about it. We always want to hear if you have a problem accessing either the website or listening to the podcasts. Now, while you're on the website, maybe you'd like to sign up for our newsletter. It only comes out 3 or 4 times a year. We just sent one out a couple of weeks ago. We do not send spam. We do not sell or give away your email address. We protect them under the best ability through the laws of the state of Florida and the federal government. So should you ever wish to unsubscribe, all you have to do is just send us an email to our business email address, dalmatprod@outlook.com. Put the word unsubscribe in the subject line and we'll take you off right away when we get that email. Well, again, we want to thank all our friends at Facebook. I was there yesterday. I was there over the weekend. Thank you for all the likes of the episodes and the like of our page. Those numbers keep growing. And we thank you from the bottom of our heart. It means so much to us. Now, a lot of us, including me, like to listen to podcasts on podcast platforms. that we use it while we're walking the dog or exercising or running, whatever we're doing. And so for us, those platforms are key. We started off just doing audio podcasts before we moved into video and YouTube. However, many of those platforms provide you with the opportunity of leaving some sort of review. Perhaps it's with stars, or they want you to write a sentence or two. And those are very, very important. Yes, it takes an extra couple of minutes to do it, but here's why. Most of those platforms have an algorithm for search results. And that means that if we have good reviews or good star markings, then we'll wind up higher in search results on major search engines than if we didn't. Now, if we don't have those reviews, we wind up much lower in the search results when somebody's looking for any given podcast. Of course, we're concerned with Five Alarm Task Force, but any podcast needs reviews. And even if you have to leave constructive criticism, we want that as well. That's very, very important. We want to be sure that we're bringing you the type of programming that you want to hear and listen to. So if we just take a moment or two, please, and ask you to just either mark some stars on there for our podcast or write a sentence or two, please help us out so that when others are searching for us, they'll find us more quickly. And that's it. That's all the business for today. And we'll be right back with our guests, Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez and Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Soli from the Firefighter Cancer Initiative here in South Florida. We'll be right back right after these words. And as always, please stay tuned. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, for the classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you feel confident they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how to best use and sell their own product. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up on InsightTrainingLLC.com. Your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training LLC? Well, here's part of their upcoming schedule. On August 1st, it is the LSFA 118th Annual Conference in Louisiana. It will be held August 1st through the 5th, 2023. Membership registration fee for this conference is $175, and guest registration fee is $100. Please register through the membership portal and or click on the register link on the Insight Training LLC website. Seminars at this year's annual event will be many and definitely interesting. August 26th, the Lebanon Volunteer Fire Department Max Firebox Thermal Imaging Training. Insight Training will be providing a full day of training at the Lebanon Volunteer Fire Department in Virginia on August 26th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Instructor Andy Starnes will be serving as the lead instructor. This program is custom built to the host organization's specific brands and models of the thermal imaging cameras and will include a Max Firebox live fire demonstration. Be sure to check their website, InsightTrainingLLC.com, or their Facebook page for registration and additional details. Insight Fire Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. The Firehouse Tribune has expanded, now bringing you podcasts, presentations, and training blogs. The Firehouse Tribune is an innovative way for emergency services professionals to interact, share ideas, learn, and train. We are inspired by those who came before us and built a path for us to share knowledge and experience with the rest of the emergency services world, where life experiences and training come together. Check out our podcasts, Station Talk, and the 5-Tool Firefighter Podcast. Want us to speak at your department or event? Reach out to us to set up workshops at your firehouse or virtual event on topics including the 5-Tool Firefighter, 5 key attributes of the well-rounded firefighter, and 6 tips to guide the new fire officer. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. For more info, please visit www.firehousetribune.com or email us at fhtribunepodcast@gmail.com. The new Firehouse Tribune Services, where we live by one motto, not just in emergency services, but in life. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. We're firefighters. We're law enforcement. Like everyone else, we have our aches and pains, sometimes from the job and sometimes not. We realize there are risks with this job. However, sometimes something is wrong with us and we don't know it. Now what do? Well, LifeScan Wellness Centers are dedicated to saving America's heroes. For most fire and police organizations, LifeScan Wellness Centers will send one of their mobile teams to assess every member of your department with complete and complex physical exams and blood work. Using state-of-the-art medical equipment, LifeScan staff members provide a multi-procedural exam, including cardiac stress tests, basic lab results, and ultrasound exams. LifeScan wellness exams have saved the lives of dozens of firefighters and police officers across the country. They have found tumors, aortic bulges, lung problems, and more, many of which were asymptomatic. However, early detection allowed most of these colleagues to have their personal medical professionals mitigate the health issue that otherwise might have led to a darker time. For more information, please visit their website at lifescanwellness.com. Remember, LifeScan Wellness Centers, saving the lives of America's heroes. Hello, and welcome back to this episode of 5-Alarm Task Force, if you're listening to the audio. If you're listening and watching us on the video, welcome. We're happy to have you with us. I'm Steve Green, your host. Happy to be here with you. Happy to have you with us. And my returning guests today are friends that I can finally say, friends that I met, not just on the podcast through it, but we've actually met. We've been in person together. And although we've made many friends over these 7 years, these two are two of the most important because of what they do and who they are. And it's my honor and pleasure to welcome back Dr. Alberto Juan Caban Martinez. He is a board-certified physician and scientist, tenured associate professor of public health services, deputy director of the MD-MPH program, and associate provost for research integrity at the University of Miami. He has over 10 years of domestic and international practice experience and research expertise in environmental and occupational health. Dr. Caban Martinez also serves as the deputy director of the Firefighter Cancer Initiative at the Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center, which is part of the UM medical program. Also joining us, Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Soli. She is co-deputy director, Firefighter Cancer Initiative at Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center, research assistant, professor, departments in the Departments of Medicine and Public Health Sciences at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. Dr. Schaefer-Soli is a nurse scientist and research assistant professor of medicine and public health sciences at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. She also serves as co-director of the Behavioral and Community-Based Research Shared Resource, known as BCSR, at Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center. Dr. Schaefer-Soli's research interests focus on occupational cancer risks and improving cancer screening in underserved communities. She has played a critical role in the conception of the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, a multifaceted project funded by the state of Florida to study firefighters' exposure to carcinogens, examine their cancer risk, and develop methods of education about prevention and early detection. She has led multiple projects within FCI focusing on the epidemiology and cancer screening behaviors of active and retired firefighters. To both of you, welcome back. It's been a long time, but we're thrilled to have you back with us.
Steve, it is really great to see you.
Thank you so much. Now, as I was reading those brochures and we talked this before we went on the air, that I we're going to start with a very important piece of information that I didn't see in the last couple of months, but Dr. Caban-Martinez has brought it up here. So we're going to start with that because it's a really, it's very important for you to know, and especially if you are firefighters, and again, career, volunteer, paid on call, WUI, the fact is, if you're fighting fire, you're at risk, okay? And we're going to talk about where we've come with our cancer risk and the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, especially here in Florida. But we're also going to talk about this new classification that Dr. Caban-Martinez just mentioned before we went on the air. So Dr. Caban-Martinez, we'll start with you. First of all, welcome back. It's we're so happy to have you with us again. We know how busy you are, and we thank you both for taking time to join us for this podcast. So we'll start with you, Dr. Caban-Martinez. Please let us know about this new classification regarding cancer in the fire service, please.
Yeah, absolutely, Steve. But before we get started, please call us by our first name. We respond to, hey, you, anything is fine. Except our,
thank you.
Our designations. So thank you. And then before I get started, I also just wanted to say thank you for being, you know, a steadfast and unwavering champion of firefighter health and safety. When we started this with you, you know, these conversations with you, which is now hard to believe, years ago, you know, you've been able to be an amazing conduit of you know, sharing really key and important information. So, you know, on behalf of our team, our PI, Dr. Aaron Kobitz, we are incredibly thankful to, you know, to you and the podcast for being able to disseminate this really important information.
Well, thank you. It's our honor.
So let me begin by sharing with our with your listeners something really important that has happened since we last chatted. So there is an international agency called the International Agency for Research on Cancer, or IARC for short. It's an agency that falls within the World Health Organization, and its primary focus is to control cancer, understand what causes it and how we can control it in human populations. One of the programs that IARC offers is called the Monograph Series, where they issue about three of these really thick monographs. If you've ever seen like a big, thick textbook, right, that could be like a doorstop, this is what these monographs look like. They issue about three of them a year. So your listeners may recall that back in 1998 or close to around 2000, they released a monograph number 98 that was focused on three things about work. One was shift work, painting, and firefighting. And at the time, that monograph reached the conclusion that firefighting was considered a group 2B carcinogen. Basically, a review of all the science at the time to that time point said that there is some considerable risk in firefighting. And it was interesting that it was coupled with the same photo of people doing shift work, because it's like, not only is the profession of firefighting itself, you know, exposure to carcinogens, but the fact that you undergo shift work, which is also carcinogenic, and we consider shift work as an exposure to carcinogens through hormone dysregulation, right? If you're not sleeping your regular time shifts, your hormones are all off. Therefore, that contributes also to cancer. So fast forward till now, 2022, and the IARC was commissioned to redo the analysis and see, based on everything that's been new since monograph, that initial monograph to present day, does that new literature change at all the grade or the scale? So over about a year and a half, about 25 scientists created like a work group to review a lot of new literature. In the last 20 years, there's been a lot that has been coming online from different countries about cancer risk in the fire service. And in June of 2022, so it's about a year from now, since we've been recording this podcast, that the team finished a conclusion and had an executive summary that's available right away on the Lancet. I can share with you that link for your listeners if they want to see the executive summary. It's only two pages. And the determination there at that point was that the risk of cancer in the fire service got elevated from that 2B designation up to a group one, so the highest level, specifically for kidney cancer and mesothelioma is what elevated it to a grade one risk of firefighting being a cancer. Grade one is really serious, right? So that means that if you're exposed to this, you have a high risk of developing cancer. In this same monograph, there was also a couple of other things that were elevated beyond cancer. So it was not just that, you know, kidney cancer and mesothelioma were the only ones, but also prostate cancer, colon cancer, some of the other digestive ones were elevated as well during in this monograph. And so this is really key for our firefighters, as there's now evidence, right, to show that the not only is there a grade one designation for kidney and mesothelioma, but that there's increased evidence, even though it looks on the paper like it's limited evidence, it's increased evidence for colon, prostate, testicular melanoma, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. So that has been a big change since we last met, this IARC release. And I want your listeners to know that this is, like you mentioned earlier, this is not just about career sort of structural firefighting. This impacts all firefighters, including wildland firefighting, fire investigators, you know, volunteers. Everybody is impacted by this. If you fight fires in any way, this information is for you.
That is stunning information. There's no doubt about it. I don't think that any of us, even though we've been working with this for several years already, in the official Firefighter Cancer Initiative, realized that a national or international organization was looking at it as closely as this and came up with this latest bulletin. And I think the fact that these, as I mentioned before we start recording, was that we know that a lot of the podcasts we've done that have focused on the Firefighter Cancer Initiative or Cancer in the Fire Service have the greatest reach to our audience around the world. People thought, well, you know, it's only going to be talking US, maybe Canada. Well, US and Canada lit it off, but there is now interest and work being done all over the world. And we've seen this with these podcasts as we look at our stats in the countries. We've had these podcasts are some of the most successful going out to over 40 countries across six continents. And I think that that echoes the interest and concern that our brothers and sisters around the world have, because a lot of the changes that we said have happened here in the United States really have happened worldwide. And, you know, the change, for example, in furniture, how it went from real wood and real furniture to man-made versions, and how that in and of itself changed our ability to respond, the time we have to respond to a fire from its incipient stage to its active stage. And where we used to have, there was an article in one of the trades over the weekend that said it used to be, I think by 1990 or 1988, we had up to 17 minutes to get on scene. Now we have between 3 and 4 minutes to get on scene before it moves from that incipient stage. So I think the same thing holds true. We have to understand, for our viewers and listeners need to understand, that this is the same truth with cancer. Having gone through two scares myself, and having a oncologist who initially didn't know anything about the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, but I taught him about it, and he's been very interested in it ever since. And he was the one who said, you know, their firefighters need to know now exactly, have an idea of what they're fighting fires with. The only thing they can be sure of that's maybe still the same as the old days is fighting a woods fire or grass fire. But then you're still wearing gear. And we haven't even gotten to that point, the problem with the gear that we wear. But now everything else that burns, from cars to furniture in the home to big box stores, has very, very heavy carcinogenic composites in it. And so we have to understand that every time we're fighting a fire that's burning, whether it's a wastebasket, a dumpster, or a factory, we are always going to be faced with carcinogens in those fires.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Steve, going back to the international reach, I just wanted to talk to you a little bit more about so every February we host our International Firefighter Cancer Symposium. So this year we had members from that were part of the IARC meeting. So including Dr. Cabal Martinez, Alberto, who was there, we had several other scientists and doctors that were part of that meeting in France come and present. And so we had people from Australia, from Portugal, from Canada, and, you know, just to see the response from firefighters. So we had close to 400 people in person and another 400 people online from all over the world, participating, asking questions, interacting with not only the scientists, but we also had firefighters from Canada, firefighters from Australia. So it really is reaching, you know, a worldwide audience. And so I just wanted to share that with you, as far as, you know, if people are interested in hearing more about, you know, the IARC monograph and what went into it, because it was broken down in three groups. So epidemiology studies, mechanistic studies, and then environmental and exposure studies. And so, you know, the symposium was a really great opportunity for us to break down everything that went into this reclassification and kind of made it a little more digestible. And anyone can go onto our website at, you know, sylvester.org/firefighters, and you can see all of the presentations that were there from everyone that presented and participated. It also gave us a really great opportunity on the second day to have workshops and small groups where people were able to work together and kind of, you know, talk about future collaboration. So not only scientists, but firefighters, community members. So it was a really great opportunity. What's great was everything was filmed and distributed and saved online. So if people want to go back and look at that, it's a really great resource.
That sounds terrific. And we'll see if we'll get that information as well and put that in the show notes. But the fact that you're seeing that buy-in, I think, is the most important fact. Because when we started our talks together several years ago, we were still getting a lot of resistance. It was, sometimes it felt like, you know, and I'm sure you guys felt it too, banging your head against the wall. You know what was in front of you. You saw it and you tried to share that message, but some people just didn't want to believe it. And unfortunately, when it was somebody else in the department who was diagnosed, we start to see the buy-in through that. Wait a second, this is really happening. This isn't just what we're hearing from other people in other states. My friend Dave here in the fire department was just diagnosed with, you know, renal cancer. And he's one of the healthiest guys we've ever had in the fire, in our firehouse. That's right. But we don't want it to get to that point, do we? We're trying to still get that education out there so that they don't wait for that something bad to happen. You know, we've promoted on most of the podcasts, promote that, you know, if you're going to your doctor, your own personal doctor, tell them right away that you are or you have been a firefighter. Let them know. Keep track of your exposures. And now both the IAFF, the IAFC, and National Volunteer Fire Council all have samples of questionnaires or forms you can keep to track your exposure, and let people know about it, and make sure that you know where you've been, so that, heaven forbid, you have a problem, it might be easier for the doctors to track by if you've kept track of your exposures, where you've, you know, had that light bulb go off and say, I better keep track of this one, things like that. So
yeah, I think that brings up, you know, I know we want to talk about some of the new things that we've done in the last couple of years since we've last spoken. So there's a couple things that, you know, we've been doing in Florida that is available to, you know, everyone at a national level. So one is our personal exposure reporting app, that's been around now for, you know, I think for 7 years. But this is free to all firefighters. And it's exactly what you're saying, an easy way to report and keep track of all of their exposures. And it's very simple. It's all on their, you know, their smartphone. They can go in and say, you know, what the incident was, how long they were in there, what was burning. We've actually edited, added to it for fire investigators, so they can talk about, their specific fire incident. But we also ask questions related to decon practices, and then any type of, health effects after, if they were coughing, if they had, chest pain, anything like that. So then they have those records, and they can keep them for themselves. And the other good thing about it is they can go back retrospectively and put that information in. If they knew they were on X number of fires, before they downloaded the app. The other thing that we've really been working really hard on, is their education related to clinical screening. So we have a clinical team now, where we have a firefighter cancer prevention and wellness clinic. And so we've actually adapted it to make it mobile, so it's easier for our firefighters. So we were able to purchase through a foundation grant a Sprinter van that we've turned into a clinic room. And so our nurse practitioner and our nurse, they take it to the fire station. They do a full head to toe yearly physical, and then refer them for cancer screenings depending on their age. So with that comes a lot of education. We've created basically like a cheat sheet that they can take with them to the doctors if they go to another doctor about what they should be screened for and at what age, because they're considered high risk because they're firefighters. And so we've used the American Cancer Society, the US Task Force, but also bringing in the NFPA standards to determine the screening recommendations that we're giving for firefighters. So that's another really great resource that, again, we can share that information where they can download it. It's actually on a toolkit that we've created that is, free and online as a mobile app. So if they go to their app store and just type in Firefighter Cancer Initiative, it has all of that information for them. And it's a really great resource. Not only does it have the screening information, but also gives you information on all of the current research studies that we're doing, all our videos, education material. So it's a really great resource. We'd be happy to share it with you and your audience.
Great. Well, thank you. We're going to make sure we mention that in the show notes as well. One of the other things I'd like to touch on, and this deals with my situation, was that I finally was able, my oncologist was able to get me cleared to have the PFAS labs done on my blood samples. And it took him about 4 weeks to get it all arranged and stuff like that, because it was, he said, listen, I'm not going to have you do it unless I know it's paid for by Medicare, because I don't, they, some of these tests can be exorbitant, he said. So he says, I'll work on it tomorrow, but because you should have by Monday. Well, it was about 5 weeks later, but they stuck with it and they got it. And thank goodness, came back as in the normal range. I'm not, there was no problem with it. And back in 2018, which was my second scare, we did the bone marrow assay at that point. And again, I was cleared with that. And so for me, actually, he was actually when I first took ill in 2020 and didn't know what it was, even with my background, he was the first one I reached out to, because I figured heavy weight loss and severe lethargy and things like that. Maybe I came down with some form of cancer, but I went to him and he checked me out and he says, no, you're, he goes, I would have seen in 2018 the little seeds if you were going to be sick in 2020. And so he says, so I think that's not going to be the cause. And it turned out it was not, thank goodness. But I know that one of the strongest points we've tried to make is being tested. When he asked me, we can, he said to me, well, we can do the bone marrow test right here in my office. I said, when? He goes, we'll do it right now. And I said, what does it take? He goes, just lay on your side. I said, all right, I got a deal for you. I said, we can do it now if you hold off on the epinephrine. Just give me the lidocaine. He goes, my job is to keep my patients out of pain. I'm not going to put epinephrine because I know that hurts. He goes, I'll just give you the lidocaine block. And I said, that's fine. And we did it. And it really was a nothing event. It just, little tiny discomfort, but it was so worthwhile because when I've been back with him over the last 2 years, my follow-ups, and again, this is, folks, I'm not in any way saying I have cancer. I do not, thank God. I just see him as a regular basis because he has been the person I could trust in and has been testing me because as a former firefighter. And then with this, the new, what turned out to be autoimmune disorders. But we need to let our viewers and listeners know that there is, you're not showing any weakness when you have a test. What you're doing is you're buying, it's an insurance policy, perhaps, to show that you and your family and your kids and your parents and everybody else know that you are okay. And you're doing everything you can to be okay. Because this isn't just about you. It's about those who care about you as well. And sometimes we lose that part of it as we're trying to educate them. We also have to kind of teach them with our arms around them and saying, look, this is for your health, make sure you're better. You have a long career or a long, healthy retirement.
Yeah. Steve, if I could say, like, you know, what you're saying is a very important and key message, you know, that testing and screening is really critical to knowing where you are, right, and where you stand. I wanted to talk just a second about sort of like PFAS and PFAS testing, because I know on your podcast, there's been discussion on PFAS. You know, the testing and screening of PFAS is sort of like evolving in the general population, right? Not, you know, separate and distinct from our firefighters. And it's good and important to know like where you're at and where you stand. Right now, there is testing for PFAS in blood, that you can have a blood test, a simple blood test, and know, you know, what kind of perfluorinated alkyl substances you have in your body. But let me just take a step back and just refresh, especially if they're hearing this for the first time, that, you know, PFAS is a chemical compound, and it's a family of compounds. So there's over like 4,000 different types of PFAS out there, and they're not natural chemicals. They were man-made, you know, in the 1940s and 1950s, by third-party companies that were using them for different purposes, and then realized that they have a property where they can repel water. And because of their ability to do that, because of the carbon and fluorine bonds being very strong in these PFAS chemicals, they've been placed in a lot of different things that we use as consumers, right? So if you fry an egg in the morning, sunny side up, and it, you know, swivels around in your pan, chances are there's you know, some type of PFAS congener, analyte, some type of it there that's making it you know, smooth. Same thing as if you spill some wine on your couch, and you know, it forms beads and it trickles off, or your raincoat forms beads and it trickles off. There tends to be, you know, some of those PFAS compounds that have that water repellent property. In the literature, we've been learning that our firefighters are exposed to it through the turnout gear, the water barrier liner that's inside the safety turnout gear. It's also in aqueous film fighting foams as part of different types of mixtures of the AFFF. Have these PFAS chemicals in there. And so as we learn more about the health effects of it, where regulations are trying to control the presence and type of those PFAS that are on there, military DOD has been testing for them. So as part of the annual physical exam, I think maybe like 3 or 4 years now, I can't remember, is mandated, you know, to have the annual for, I think, 7 of the different types of PFOA, PFAS compounds. And then the challenge that becomes for us is, as healthcare providers, is what is normal, right? What PFAS is normal? So the answer should be, you shouldn't have any PFAS in your blood, period, right? Because it was created by man. And this shouldn't be in the environment or different products. But unfortunately it is, and sort of monitoring and testing and knowing where you're at is important. So you know where you're at. We don't necessarily have what are considered normal levels. I just finished doing a stint on the National Academies of Sciences committee as a liaison for the fire service for PFAS. It was a committee that was done to understand, you know, health advisory for PFAS. And that's still a little bit confusing about, you know, what is normal PFAS levels in your blood, right? If we're trying to learn like what normal PFAS levels look like to say development of cancer or development of heart disease because you have this high level of PFAS. For your readers, it's important, for your listeners, it's important to know that like PFAS can last a very long time in the body. Some of them last as short as 2 years or a year. Some of them can last 7 to 8 years, depending on how, the type of chemical composition, like what it looks like, that type of PFAS. Interestingly, I did want to share with the readers, you know, we're always looking for solutions. We're like, well, what do I do? I've got PFAS in me. So one is, if you test yourself, you know what kind of, you know, the type and concentration of PFAS you have in your blood, but you don't know where it's coming from, right? Am I drinking this in my water source? Is this coming from my gear? Is this coming from like the three, you know, AFFF events that I served in the last 6 months? We don't necessarily know the exact point sources, but testing helps us determine, is my levels going up or is it going down, right? So about a year ago, the Australian firefighters did what we call a randomized clinical trial. It's sort of like the gold standard of evaluating an intervention or an effect of something. And they basically randomized Australian firefighters into either donating blood, like whole blood, or donating plasma. And they basically had like a number, a sample of firefighters that were enrolled into this randomized clinical trial. Some got nothing. They didn't have to donate any blood. They just watched them for a whole year. Some got put into an arm of investigation where they had to donate whole blood every so often, like every 6 weeks to 8 weeks. And then others had to do plasma. So they go into a machine, the machine processes and, you know, takes out plasma and then puts it back at different intervals. And what they learned is that plasma donation was both worked at reducing PFAS, whole blood donation and plasma donation. I think it was like about one or so milligrams per deciliter in the blood. So if you know, like, you know, if you are a firefighter that has you know, high PFAS in the blood, one way to do it is regular you know, blood donations. That study sort of raised a lot of questions in our mind too about, you know, what happens to this blood after it's been collected and sort of the ethics of, like, you know, putting it back into circulation, right? Because it could be used for an operation for someone else. And otherwise, and those are still being hotly debated right now, but at least it does provide some interim solution, you know, should you have a first responder that does have elevated PFAS levels, to think about, you know, blood donation as it, even though you still have to evaluate the point sources, like where is that PFAS coming from? Is it coming from their gear or their foam or some other source in the station or outside of work?
Well, yeah, I think that is absolutely imperative. And it's, again, you know, the two things that firefighters detest the most are change and status quo.
Right.
So it's important that we work to, again, to educate. I don't think we need to beat anybody over the head, but I think it's important that we educate about this, the development now, what's happened with our looks at PFAS since it broke several years ago. And as I mentioned before we started, we're very lucky that next week we close off our seventh season with Diane Cotter, who along with her husband Paul really blew the lid off the issue of PFAS in firefighter gear. And so they've been great ambassadors for us to get that message out to other firefighters, because Paul was a firefighter. He is. He's still a firefighter, just like I'm still a firefighter. It's who we define ourselves as after our service. And thanks to the two of them, that message, initially it was a very difficult ride, but that message got out there. We had great people come up from around the country to help and back it up. The whole team that you have at UM Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center, working on the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, is a big part of that. And it's these kind of episodes that, you know, just because we know now what PFAS, better idea what it is, where it is, how we're dealing with it, and there are certain tests, and now we even have a possible way of lowering elevated levels in certain firefighters. We have to get the message out still, though. This is not the end of the issue with PFAS and PFOA. As we said, it's global. it's not just firefighters in the United States. It's firefighters, firefighters all over the world, but it's also people, innocent citizens, just wherever we live, there's been, this chemical's been around, as Alberto said, from since the 40s and into the 50s. And whether or not the manufacturers knew it was carcinogenic is still something being debated in scientific papers that I don't read. But we know that as more news comes out, and teams like the one at Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center, UM, and other teams around the country are going to update what they're doing to stay in at that highest level of information that you share with the people in your, in the area that you're working in and protecting, like you are here for us here in South Florida. But again, my question, and maybe we'll take a break here and we'll come back with this, is education. The best way that the two of you, how we can better educate our firefighters so that they don't feel that we're trying to change the way their service or lessen it. It's they are men and women in the fire service in this country, all around the world. These people who give of themselves, whether it's career or volunteer, makes no difference. It's the fact that these men and women dedicate themselves to protecting lives and property in various communities. And so if they're willing to rise to that point, it's our obligation, I believe, to back them up with as much information as we can. And at the same time, with something like PFAS, keep our citizens aware as well, because that's out there in the public now. In the public thing, I've seen several articles on national newspapers that discuss this. All right, so folks, we're going to take a quick break here. And if you're watching the video, you will not see anything different. If you're listening to the audio, well, you know we're going to take a little break, have a couple of words, and then we'll be back with our guests, Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez and Dr. Natasha Soli, as we talk about the Firefighter Cancer Initiative here in Florida and how it affects firefighters and people, regular people, all around the world. So we'll be right back right after these words. As always, please stay tuned.
Are you one of those people who thinks it's okay to drive stoned? I mean, what's the worst that can happen? You end up driving below the speed limit? It's no big deal, right? Wrong. The truth is, your reaction times slow way down when you're high. You not only put yourself in danger, but everyone around you. Talk about a buzzkill. Stop kidding yourself. It's not okay to drive high. If you've been using marijuana in any form, do not get behind the wheel. If you feel different, you drive different. Drive high, get a DUI. Paid for by NHTSA.
The tone sounds and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. And that was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine, and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE. Bunker pants, check. Turnout coat, check. Hood, check. Gloves, check. Escape line, check. SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay, and head for the open front door, where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy is behind you. Crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see, it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down, that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go to. Face peace on.
You show up for your shift, but you're not feeling 100%. You greet your colleagues with a smile, but just can't put your finger on it. I'll shake it off in an hour, you think to yourself. You take a couple of nothing runs, but you're still not feeling any better when you get back to the barn. You throw some cold water on your face and think, yeah, that's more like it. And you head back to the day room. With training scheduled for after lunch, you make yourself comfortable in one of the recliners, but as you sit there, you feel ill. You start to sweat, and you feel nauseous. There's a pain in your left arm that you've never had before. "Hey, guys," you call out. I'm not feeling well." And your voice trails, your eyes close, and the darkness surrounds you. More firefighters die from cardiovascular health issues than any other reason. Don't let self-pride get in the way of taking care of yourself. See your doctor on a regular basis, and be sure to advise him or her that you're a firefighter. Don't be a statistic. Be a healthy firefighter with a long career. For more information, visit the IAFF, NVFC, or IAFC-SHS websites.
Hello and welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force. I'm your host, Steve Green. And with us today are two longtime supporters and friends of the podcast. They came to me in my first year. We met at an office in the Deerfield Beach, and it was an amazing opportunity. Our mutual friend, Todd LeDuc, who was then Executive Assistant Chief of Broward County Fire and is now the Chief Strategy Officer for LifeScan Wellness Centers. We were all together, and with me today, once again, is Dr. Alberto Caban-Martinez and Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Soli, and they are the leaders of the Firefighter Cancer Initiative team at Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center's Firefighter Cancer Initiative Center, with along with UM, University of Miami. And we are talking about, the changes in several years since we've all been, three of us have been together, talking about the Firefighter Cancer Initiative. It's come a long way from where we were several years ago. We've had good, some good work. As I said, the state of Florida, we had, excuse me one second, sorry about that. We talked about the fact that here in Florida, the state got money initially a couple of years ago for quick decon tools, bucket, brushes, to be delivered to every, available to every fire department in the state of Florida. And I believe we were the first state to even do something like that. And I think part of that is because of the influence that the Sylvester Cancer Comprehensive Cancer Program has had, because you guys have been researching longer than I've been doing the podcast, and you've been there taking us through it. So you mentioned that there are some new facts, new data, and new items that we should hear about. So Alberto, if you would, please.
Yeah, we're excited to share a couple of new and different projects that we've been working on, especially since we last spoke. So one really important project to us that's still ongoing now for about 5 years is the National Firefighter Tumor Bank. So this is an opportunity for your listeners to learn about this biorepository and why it's special. You know, understanding why we see certain types of cancer arise in the fire service is really key, right? So if you look at, like, what are the top three things that most Americans die of, right? So the first thing is cardiovascular disease. So the number one killer among any American, regardless if you're a firefighter or not, is cardiovascular disease. The second most common cause is cancer. And then the third most common cause are unintentional injuries. So then you say, okay, well, if the second most common cause is cancer, so then why should I care about it? You know, everyone's going to die of either cardiovascular disease or cancer. Well, for us as clinician scientists, the interest is that we are seeing specific types of cancers arise in the fire service at very high rates. And that's not normal, right? And that's something that we can use both medicine and science to evaluate and limit the risk of developing those really specific types of cancers. There should be no reason that our firefighters experience that. And so when we do our science, we prioritize based on the cancers that we see elevated within the fire service. So for us as scientists to understand what those cancers are, how they come about, what type of treatments are best for them, we need to study that cancer. So the best way to do it is to collect them, take a look at them, you know, under the microscope. Do they look very different in how they appear between a firefighter and a non-firefighter? And so having that data available to us is really key. And the way that we've been working in the National Firefighter Cancer Initiative is to ask firefighters to donate a sample of those cancers should they arise. So any firefighter that's interested that has been diagnosed previously with cancer, even if it was 2 or 3 years ago, they should reach out to us at the National Firefighter Cancer Initiative and engage with our nurse navigator, Johanna Garibaldi, who leads the tumor bank for firefighters. And she'll help with you for free to go grab the sample that's saved by pathology, frozen that they have. And then we bring it over to our Firefighter Cancer Initiative. And we use them in a lot of different experiments because we would like to learn whether those tissues of those cancers, they have different blood vessels or what type of molecules are inside of them, if they are different from one that you would see in a person that's non-fire. So we want to make sure that your listeners are aware that there is this national resource. Also, for other scientists that may listen to your podcast that want to use firefighter tumor samples to study for a particular type of cancer, whether it's kidney cancer or thyroid cancer, or prostate cancer, that they donate those samples to us. It's really easy. The workload falls on us to get the paperwork and retrieve the sample. But you make a huge difference by allowing us to have that sample so that we can study it in science.
That's amazing. I don't think everybody has heard of blood banks, but right. I don't think we've anybody's ever heard of a tumor bank. But it makes perfect sense, because if we can study those from around the country and see how they fall for some areas might be much less than others, and some might be much worse than others, and some could be on a par, I think that would be phenomenal and provide so much more medical information to help us perhaps prevent or better treat cancers when they happen to firefighters.
Yeah, that's right. Because if you think about it, like if let's say I went to my urologist to get evaluated for prostate cancer, they'll do a biopsy, of the prostate, and take those samples to the lab and process them to see like, well, do you have prostate cancer or not? So what happens to that that sample when it goes to pathology? Well, they save it, right? They put it in a cassette and they put it in a specific solution to preserve it over time should it need to be evaluated. So one way that firefighters can help the science of cancer in the fire service is by just working with our team to let us have a piece of that sample so that we can store it and then use it for different science, like you said, and compare different tissues if it's worse or the same than a non-firefighter, or even within firefighters, compare the severity based on the type of exposures that they see on fire scene to the type of cancer that came out. That makes a big difference for us as scientists.
Right. And we want to stress the point that no one is asking to cut into you if you've been diagnosed. This is
right.
using tissue that was surgically removed from you, either during the biopsy, during the testing, or during treatment. And that's what the Firefighter Cancer Initiative here in Florida would use. Nothing to do with going into asking you to let them cut something out of you personally for this test. No, that is not what you heard. It is simply going to be using tissues that have been surgically removed from you under the proper conditions, because it was necessary from a diagnosis point. And then they use that, and they'll use that for their comparisons and learning more about the prevalence of certain cancers in areas, in local areas, state areas, could be exposures. There's so much, I guess, information that those kind of exams could provide to you, correct?
Yeah, they make a huge difference, yeah. And just understanding those, the types of tissues, right? Like if you think about thyroid cancer, so thyroid cancer is elevated in the fire service. We often see it 2 times or 3 times more higher in men and women firefighters than we do in the general population. The most common type is papillary thyroid cancer. It's like if you look at 100% pie, right? Like a pie chart with 100%. This is the bulk of all the types of cancers that come up there. So understanding if that type of cancer is very different in the fire service, firefighter compared to the general population is really key for us, because it can help with Informing screening, like what type of screening should be done with how often, and if you do get that cancer, what type of treatments are best effective, because we see this type of cancer arise in the fire service. So having those samples really informs many different aspects of, you know, screening, prevention, treatment, and then rehabilitation to get them back into the fires, you know, the fire service.
Right. So
Steve, I just want to echo what Alberto was saying, as far as, you know, if someone gets, you know, a biopsy or something, their doctor collects it and is already keeping it. So if you were someone said, oh, well, I was diagnosed last year, I wish I would have known, we can still get that sample, because it's just a matter of paperwork of our pathology talking to the pathology lab that they had already donated to, and because they already have it. So I know that that question comes up a lot, as far as like, oh, I wish I knew I got it, you know, a year ago. There's still opportunity that we can get those samples, and so we're able to study their tumors or their tissue.
That's great to know. And what we'll do is we'll make sure we have information about that in the show notes as well, so that if you do want to contribute tissue that has been removed from you, and you want to contribute that and donate that to the team at the Firefighter Cancer Initiative here in Miami, we'll have that information for you. If we don't have it in time for the show notes, we'll still make sure we have it, and we'll make it available, you know, through our email. We'll give you the email address, which is always on every show as well. And so you can reach out to us that way. But it is a way to, when you think about it, I'm talking to our listeners and viewers, when you think about it, this is a way for you to help not only other people today, but you could be helping people in the future, because what they learn from studying these tissues, especially from a wide group of firefighters around the country, this would help see what we can do in other ways to either prevent or treat these cancers down the road. Thank goodness we've seen tremendous strides in the care for cancer patients between technology and pharmacology. And this is just could be another step that could help us in the battle, not just firefighters, but we can help others as well by our researchers knowing, looking at these tissues, having an idea what generated it, what it caused, what's the result after the removal, et cetera. And other doctors can learn from that, and other research teams can learn from that. So this is a wonderful opportunity to help not just firefighters, but to help people to understand cancers, understand and let our doctors and researchers know how these cancers are working individually. Because while this cancer might, this firefighter might have thyroid cancer, and this firefighter might have thyroid cancer, they may not be the exact same cancers. And so segments, pieces of each one of those, if they're different, will help that team know this one was from this firefighter who had this kind of cancer. This was from a different firefighter, but they almost look the same with that type of cancer. And the more we learn, the better we can take care of each other. And that's the most important part.
Steve, speaking about the future, and there's another sort of project we wanted to share with you about that started relatively like in the last 2 years, about metals and understanding metals and cancer, if we want to talk about that today.
Sure. Well, if you have the time, I'd love to hear it. Yeah.
So I know hot in discussion recently is sort of electric vehicle fires. Right. And how they can be challenging and persistent fires to turn off. So electric vehicle fires obviously operate on batteries in these vehicles, and they emit concentrations of metals, particularly heavy metals, that we're concerned about its relationship to health effects. So certain metals are really essential to the human body. They help metabolism run right? So selenium and zinc, you need those to help run the citric acid cycle. Not to bring us back down to biology from high school, but you know, they're really important metabolic pathways. But it turns out some of these other metals that are on the periodic table of elements also can be hazardous to our health as humans, particularly to our firefighters who are being exposed to these in high concentrations during fire suppression activities. So our team has been trying to creatively figure out a way to monitor, to what we call like biomonitoring of the firefighter workforce of heavy metals. And I would say in the last 2 to 3 years, we've been working on using toenail clippings from firefighters as a way to give them feedback on what heavy metals they're exposed to over the long term. So let me explain sort of like how this works, right? Heavy metals, if you have a fire of a car, that plume will also contain the presence of these metals. They can enter the firefighter's body either through thermal absorption on the skin, or they can be inhaled through the lungs, or they can be ingested. This is why you should never eat on the fire scene, right? Even if you want a snack or something, because you could be ingesting different carcinogenic compounds. Turns out these heavy metals, they aerosolize as well. So they're in the air plume and they can enter the firefighter through any of those ways. Normally, clinically, the fastest way to determine if somebody has heavy metals in their system is doing a blood sample, and you get what type of heavy metals are free flowing in that moment that you took that blood sample. But what kind of metals did the firefighter come across over time, over a long extended of time? So this is where toenail clippings, believe it or not, are really helpful and useful. I know we just throw them away in the trash can, you know, or wherever, whenever you cut your toenails, but they actually are a really useful piece of information. So the way I like to explain it is, if you've ever chopped down a tree or looked at the stump of a tree, you notice that the stump has rings around it, right? So at the center of the stump is like a dot, and then a series of rings appears around the tree depending on its maturity and age. In fact, botanists will use it to tell you like, oh, you know, 10 years ago, there was a plague or there was a heavy rain season, because they can see those, the presence of those artifacts on the rings of the tree. Well, guess what? It turns out our toenails are not much different. So if you look at the clippings of the toenail, right, the tail end, the one that we cut off every so often, those are a matrix, sort of like rings on toenails that allow us to see what you were exposed to 6 months ago to 9 months ago. So we've been pilot testing with our firefighters the collection of these toenail clippings and characterizing what heavy metals they're in there. So the way that our experiment works is that we ask firefighters to either postal mail them, or if we see them in person at the fire station or at a conference, you know, if they would give us their toenails. We separate the two big toe, the clippings that come from the two big toes are kept in a separate envelope than from the toenail clippings of the eight other toes. We take those toenails back here to the lab at the University of Miami at Sylvester, and we sort of clean them out, right? We put them in a high vibration and a series of washes, and then digest them. We can put that digested toenails into a machine called ICP-MS. And it's really cool because it tells you the charge potential of metal. So it looks at that little fluid and it says, okay, this metal, are you present? And how much are you present in that sample? And so we can take that toenail clipping and then say, well, in the last 6 months to 9 months, you were exposed to these heavy metals because they were impregnated and are resident inside those toenail clippings. And so if you collect them over time, you can actually create a picture of, like, you know, up and down of which heavy metals came into and out of the body over time. We call those biomarkers, right? It's sort of like the toenail clippings serve as a biomarker of heavy metal exposures, and have been recently developing those approaches so that we can look at long-term effects of heavy metal exposure and then link them to health, right? Like, does that contribute to the development of a certain type of cancer or cardiovascular disease and so on?
That is fascinating. But I will caution you folks listening and watching, please do not send any toenails to Five Alarm Task Force, okay? We are not collecting them for them. No, please don't start flooding us with toenails. But again, we will give you the email address in the show notes to reach us if you were to get some of the information that we've talked about today. But again, that's something fascinating. And I think one of the things that I've learned from the two of you since we first met at that first meeting is the fact that you and your team are constantly looking for new ways. You're thinking outside the box. You've since we've talked the first time, you're always looking for another pathway to find cancer, another pathway to help fight this cancer, how to avoid this cancer, what's causing it. And just even again, this concept of the heavy metals and the toenails. Yeah, it sounds kind of joking at first, but when you think about the scientific and health values of something as simple as our toenail clippings, as you said, that we normally just either, if we're doing it ourselves, throw it away. It's done at a pedicure and they get rid of it. But the fact that they are they're full of information that can be used to help these teams, and not just our team, but wherever it's being shared, learn about the heavy metals in our body. That is another, as you stated, is another danger that firefighters face. You know, that's why, you know, we work so hard to recommend, and not just to the firefighters, but to their communities, that every firefighter has two sets of gear so that we can decon one after a working fight. No, we don't have to decon if they wear their gear and taking a little kitty down from a tree. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about inactive fires. When they get in there and they're fighting the fire, even if they're outside, depending on how the wind blows and how much wind, that can affect them. When they're inside and the fire is done, they put out the fire. We do what's called overhaul. We have to make sure that there are no embers, live embers, anywhere in that building or that home that could rekindle the fire. So we go in there and take down parts of the walls and things in the kitchen and this, that. Now, what we used to do, because we're retired and sweaty from doing the firefighting, we would take off our bunker gear, at least our jackets, so we could be a little bit cooler. Well, what we didn't realize is that when we sweat like that, our pores are open. And it's a two-way street. It's not just our sweat coming out. It's two ways. And a lot of the carcinogens that are still floating in the air, even though the fire has been wetted down and we're looking for embers, every time we break a piece of wallboard, every time we pull down a piece of the ceiling, especially if it has carbon on it, we are shaking those molecules loose. And with our arms out and bare, our hands bare, if we're not wearing gloves, and our pores open, that's how carcinogens get into us, or the metals get into us. As Alberto said, it can be ingested, could be transdermal, whatever. But the fact is that the toenail clippings are basically a non-scientific, for us, way to help these cancer fighting teams learn more about the cancer and heavy metals. And heavy metals can also, that heavy metals, some heavy metals lead to carcinogens, right? Or lead to cancer?
Well, not all of them, not all of them, but some do. They have known human health effects.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is something that you can do that's basically very simple. You probably do it anyway. So instead of just throwing them in the wastebasket, put them in a little baggie, put your name on it, and then you'll send it off to the address that we'll get for you. But again, it's a simple way. It's something that you do anyway. Well, you should be doing anyway. Right. Especially if you're wearing those fire boots. But just think that, you know, we're talking about so many scientific things that have been happening to help us fight cancer in the fire service. And now here's something that basically for us is just an everyday nothing, but it can be, there's value to it. And that's what you have to remember, is that simple little things can have value that can help our researchers look into what's causing these cancers in our brothers and sisters, and what can be done to treat that or avoid it, et cetera. So simple. Not everything has to be very complex. And thank you for sharing that with us, because I don't think any of us would have even thought about something as simple as that, how valuable it can be.
Yeah, I think what we've learned, you know, from attending firefighter conferences and speaking to different firefighters is that, you know, metals are a big concern now, especially with electric vehicle fires. And it was sort of our way of responding scientifically in a way of how can you biomonitor your exposure in a non-invasive way, right? Like it's easier than doing a blood test. Just, you know, share your toenail samples and you get a picture of what you're exposed to over the long term.
That's amazing that you can actually do that. And I think that it's going to be a powerful tool as we see these electric vehicles. We now have several fire pumpers. There's one in Wisconsin. The LA city has their first electric fire engine there, and more coming. So we're going to see these on the consumer driving car, but we're seeing it in business vehicles now as well. And now we're seeing it even in the fire department vehicle.
That's right. That's right.
Right. So, well, you know, there is a, you know, we've all seen the videos of a phone being charged that burst into flame, or one of these electric skateboards or scooters. And we've seen them. As a matter of fact, a terrible fire, a 6-alarm fire in the Bronx a couple of weeks ago, the origin of that fire was a recharging lithium ion battery. So now, you know, that's one little battery in your notebook computer or in your phone or your iPad or something like that. Now imagine taking these big Li batteries that are in the vehicles, and you've seen the fire, you know, on your newscast, you've seen fires in those vehicles and how difficult it is for the fire department to put out. We now know there's a certain number of thousands of gallons that it will take to smother a Li battery in an electric vehicle, but not every department has that water available. If there isn't a nearby hydrant, they'll have to bring in tankers or something like that. So exposure from this is not even just necessarily be personal. One of these fires in a vehicle is going to cause a lot of smoke, a lot of soot in the air. If you're in the traffic lanes behind that accident, you got to keep an eye where that's smoke is blowing. Keep your windows up, keep the AC going so that you reduce your chances of exposure. And there are lots of things you can do, especially here in the fire service. We've been talking about it for these last 5-6 years, things that practices you can have to reduce your exposure. And that's not what we're discussing in this podcast, but we've had multiple podcasts talking about that, because the Cancer Initiative has been an integral part of this podcast since we started and we first heard about it. And that was my friend Cindy L. who first got me involved. And then she was the one who said, you need to speak to this lady, Diane Cotter. And that started a whole new whirlwind tour that I thank God that he picked me up and took me on that little trip, because I got to know Diane, and she'll be on next week, and was so important in helping us with the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, because we found, you know, things that are happening that we just don't realize that it's happening to our firefighters. I, by the way, folks, I have not been, even with my medical paramedical background and working in the medical office for 12 years, I did not know. I was stupid. 2015, 2016, I heard about, and I read in the trades, firefighters were dying from cancer in New York. And I thought it was just the guys and gals who had been working the pile. I was so wrong, and I was so naive. And it wasn't until I met Cindy online as a guest and got together and learned about Alberto and Natasha, that I realized what we as firefighters were facing. And because of that, and because of the luck of having my very first interview with them 5 years ago, or maybe six already, that I knew that the Firefighter Cancer Initiative had to be a mainstay of this podcast. Because as an educator, I would have been remiss, completely remiss, if I did not try to to teach and share what I was picking up from experts like Alberto and Natasha and Dr. Peasley and so many more who have been kind enough to share and be on the show. That's where I learned about the Firefighter Cancer Initiative and how important it was. And so I want to personally thank Alberto and Natasha. I've known them for 5 or 6 years, and every day, and I, by the way, please follow them on social media, because there's stuff that we don't even have time for that I follow Alberto on. I see his posts on Twitter all the time. I always make sure to read it and then, you know, give it a like and a retweet, because the two of them have shared so much and put so much into not just the general idea of the Firefighter Cancer Initiative, but taking care of Florida firefighters. And we should be taking care of all our firefighters, but I got to thank them especially, and the University of Miami and Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Centers, I should say, because everything they do is for the best of all. And by the way, you know, they're one of the greatest cancer medical organizations in this country. They are listed as one of the top medical cancer facilities and programs in the country. But to thank Alberto and Natasha for their dedication to not only the cause, but to our local firefighters here in Florida. And, you know, a big concern came up 2 years ago, just over a year ago, from the collapse in Sunny Isles, the condo, and the dust and everything that was coming down. And finally, on one of the newscasts, somebody spoke about there's more than just concrete dust that we're dealing with. All these firefighters out here every day, 24/7. We are dealing with results of heavy metals and everything else, other carcinogens. So we are, and because they weren't wearing air packs, they were all wearing the K or the N95 masks. But even a rescue effort like that exposes our firefighters to danger of carcinogens or heavy metals. So you don't just think that we're waiting for something to burn and that's where all the problems come from. That's just one corner, one slice of the pie where our problems are. And we, as organization, have to be aware of the dangers that we face, and some we have no control over, we know that, but those that we do, we have to pay attention to those. We can't let bravado get in the way of taking care of ourselves. As we've always said, if you want to take care of others, and we applaud you for that, the first person you have to take care of is yourself. And this is one of the ways of being careful about your exposures, keeping track of them, knowing what to tell your doctors, knowing when to see a doctor. And if you need direction and help, this is the group, the team at the Firefighter Cancer Initiative at Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer at UM with Alberto and Natasha.
Thank you so much. I mean, that was just an amazing synopsis of everything that we've done. So, I mean, thank you for having us and giving us the opportunity to share with everyone. And, you know, we hope to keep this continuing and, you know, to be on the podcast again in the future.
We're planning on at least one more season. So we'll definitely bring you back again next year as well, because there's always more happening. And like I said, I get the emails. I follow you on social media, on Twitter. So I'm trying to keep abreast of everything that's happening. And I just can't thank you both enough for taking time out of very, very busy schedules to join us today. But also, more importantly, just to thank you for your dedication to protect our men and women in the fire service.
And similarly to you, Steve, thank you for, you know, helping us get the word out and reaching to so many, firefighters, affinity firefighter groups, and others that listen to this really important podcast. Because I think part of it is the dissemination, and you are that key, that translation piece that helps us reach out so many, firefighters. Hopefully we generated some discussion through today's podcast, right? And some interest, and you don't get a flock of toenail clippings in your mail.
So there'll probably be a Twitter later this afternoon. Twitter with hashtag toenails.
I'm sorry if you start getting toenails at your office. Just redirect them our way. We're happy to receive them. But again, thank you for all that you do.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's my pleasure. It's wonderful to have you back. It's been far too long, but we'll make sure we're back next season, and we'll get another update.
Awesome. Right. Sounds like a game plan.
Thank you very much. Stay safe and stay well. And folks, this will be the end of the video. If you're listening to the audio, we'll be back after a couple of words. As always, please stay tuned.
You're listening to Five Alarm Task Force.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy. I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on. There's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied or teased you? Where do you most often turn? Like many of us, you turn to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks, like family illness, money, job problems, and more. So where do you turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station. You spend a lot of time with them, and most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy at your house of worship, or contact your SISM team. Don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. Brought to you by Five Alarm Task Force, along with the Critical Incident Stress Management Team in your area, close by and confidential.
Dear John, I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is serious, and I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to when you checked on me? I don't want to leave, but remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get yours to a healthy range today. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
In the firefighting business, so to speak, there's an old joke that says the two things that firefighters detest the most are change and status quo. But I think we can beat that one. I think the thing that we hate the worst is struck by losses. That is when a firefighter, a police officer, a paramedic or EMT, a roadside construction worker, a tow operator, a road ranger loses their life to a driver who was not paying attention to the marked signs and zones. Why? Well, let me ask you this. Do you still make calls on your cell phone holding it in your hand while you're driving? Do you still send texts or emails read text or emails when you're driving? If so, welcome to the club. You're the kind of person who could easily not see the signs of an emergency scene or construction area, plow through it, and hit and kill people, innocent people, or they're doing the job. But for me, for us in the fire service, in police services, and in EMS, to lose one of our own because somebody was not paying attention, whether they're driving a little small car, or they're driving a bus, or they're driving a big rig, makes no difference. You have the opportunity, every driver has the opportunity to move over and must know that because all 50 states have move over laws. That's right.
Well, I didn't see the sign.
Yeah, you didn't notice the sign because you were too busy doing something else. Those signs are up on all the major highways, interstates, turnpikes, etc. But there are so many of you who may be listening who still don't think it could happen to you. Well, all too often, it doesn't happen to you, it happens because of you. Now, I believe that most of our listeners on Five Alarm Task Force are careful drivers. But we all need to be, just in case we're not. Let's remember the responsibility we have when we get behind the wheel of a car. Sure, for years and years we've talked about drunk driving. But now, distracted driving is almost as bad because you're not paying attention to where you're driving and what's ahead of you, whether it's traffic or an emergency scene or construction zone. And then it's too late. You realize it at the very last moment. You can't swerve. You can't turn. You wind up plowing through the safety area, striking and often killing, injuring and maiming innocent people who are just there to do their work. We have to grow beyond this. We are better than this. You are not an entitled driver. You are entitled to obey the laws of your state for driving. That's what you are entitled to. You are not entitled to take the lives of others. You are not allowed to disregard the move over law because, oh, I had an appointment I had to get to. I didn't have time to move over. Pardon me, folks, but that's BS. Okay? You need to stop and smell the roses, which means you don't want to die. You don't want to get ticketed for fatality caused by an automobile or serious injury caused by an automobile, distracted driving, dangerous driving, etc. Then wake up and smell the roses. Do the right thing. Just think for a moment. If you were sitting home and you get a call from state police that your wife and kids were killed by a driver who made an incursion on the highway, you would not like that. I can guarantee that. So, if it's not you, thank you. If you're more careful, thank you. If you pay attention while you're driving, careful. If you use hands-free calling. Now remember, even with hands-free calling, sometimes we get distracted into the call and away from our driving. But at least it's better and a bit safer than holding the phone in your hand and talking. But make sure that those around you know what they have to do, their obligation to move over. Again, it's a law. Whether you've seen the signs or not, it is a law on every interstate and every major turnpike in the country. A toll road, if it's not called a turnpike. So remember that. The responsibility is in your hands. The industry is working as hard as possible to provide early warning through
new signals available, new equipment available, both to emergency services and for drivers. It's going to be on many of your infotainment systems. It's already started, and it's spreading out across. Multiple companies are working to be able to notify you in advance that there is a work zone or an emergency scene up ahead and to move over. And it'll let you know to move to the left or move to the right. And remember, you move to those lanes and change those lanes politely by putting on your signal and advising, not just cutting out in front of somebody, because very good chance you're going to cause another accident and another emergency. Please share this with those you care about, those you love. Protect them with knowledge and education. And if you know somebody who's told you in your friend's circle that, yeah, I don't, who has to move over? I can usually get by it anyway. No, because the one they might not get by might be the one you are working on. And that's my view.
Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You will be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Alternate? Did you know that 7 out of 10 firefighters in the U.S. are volunteers? And the number of volunteer firefighters is declining every year. Most American fire companies are working to recruit new members. When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer fire departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques, as well as emergency medical services to protect your community. Volunteers are also needed to help with fundraisers, conduct fire safety programs, and pitch in around the fire station. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer. Sure, it takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. Presented by the National Volunteer Fire Council and 5 Alarm Task Force.
We're really glad to have you listening to 5 Alarm Task Force, but we also want you to know that there are other terrific fire service podcasts available. Here's our short list: Beneath the Helmet with Chief Arjuna George, The Professional Brotherhood with Chief Brian Solar, The Five-Tool Firefighter with Nick Higgins of the Firehouse Tribune, Station Talk with Assistant Chief Tom Marciano, Flow and Vent, DTFF Down to Fight Fire with British Columbia Volunteers, Better Every Shift with Aaron Zamzow, Firefighter Success with Captain Jim Moss, Code 3, the Firefighters Podcast, Make Do with Nick Peppard and Sean Duffy, Getting Salty, and Fit to Fight Fire. Remember, to be a great firefighter, you must always be willing to learn. This message is brought to you by 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. One mission, one family, first responders helping each other. And that wraps this episode of 5 Alum Task Force, brought to you by 5 Alum Task Force Corp. One family, one mission, first responders helping each other. We'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez and Dr. Natasha Schaefer-Soli, for joining us to discuss the latest updates and news from the Firefighter Cancer Initiative South Florida branch with the University of Miami Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Center. Did you know you can find us and subscribe to us on all the top podcast platforms? Just search for 5 Alum Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsors, Insight Training LLC, the Firehouse Tribune, and LifeScan Wellness Centers, as well as our promotional partners, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Responder Wipes, Hass Alert, Pry Guy Levers and Nesta Bars, the EFT Corporation, 911Lifestyle.com, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, the Albemarle Sweet Shop, the North Florida Fire Expo, and the Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to info@5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at 5 Alarm Task Force, on Facebook at facebook.com/5, then letter A as in Apple, T as in Tango, F as in Foxtrot, C as in Charlie. And on YouTube, please subscribe to our channel, 5 Alarm Task Force Corp. Stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, our nonprofit foundation, and our blog on our website, www.5-alarmtaskforcecorp.org. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and let's make sure everyone goes home.